Right, folks, welcome back to Brew Time. This week, I've got Steve Mason here from Cannonball Bike Run. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good, sir. Pleasure to meet you.
And you, mate. Now, we genuinely have, we haven't met, we had a brief chat, I think. Was it yesterday, the day before?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, just to figure out exactly what we were going to chat about on here, but I think we're just winging it, to be perfectly honest. So, yeah, Steve, Cannonball Bike Run. I mean, wow. I know of this, but I am really surprised by how many people who don't know about the Cannonball Bike Run.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, when we first, this is our 20th anniversary this year, so yeah. We're not kind of new to it, but it's been, I guess underground is not the right word, but we've not ever courted publicity for it particularly.
Yeah.
You know, we've never advertised. It's just something that kind of grew organically over the years type of thing. So in the early days, when it first launched, we had a whole lot of publicity around it. It was, you know, front page articles that we had in Performance Bike. It was on Motorcycle News. We had, in fact, for the launch event, that on the very first event, that we were setting off from the Ace Cafe in London.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ghost Rider. I don't know if you remember Ghost Rider.
Yeah, I do. I remember him.
yeah. The crazy Swede. He didn't tell us, but he announced to Motorcycle News that he was coming on the event. And so the MCN that came out literally the day before our kind of set-off party at the Ace Cafe, they had this double price spread that Ghost Rider was going to be there. And so, you know, we had this little event with 25 riders just there. And I'm not exaggerating, there was probably 4,000 people showed up. The whole place was just packed. So we had this crazy situation where we had all these people. Well, it was 25 of us setting off. Ghost Rider didn't show, of course.
Or did he?
Or did he? Yeah. But that was just the kind of, you know, that was the fuse, I guess, that kind of set us off. And, you know, there's been no looking back since, really. So.
No, I remember it. I'm very late to the biking game. I passed my test 2008, but very quickly, within the year of me passing, Cannonball came up on my radar, and I just remember looking at it and thinking, yes, that's for me. But it's always had this, not a reputation, but it always had this air of mystique around it. You know, it was it was almost like it was untouchable, but looking back, it wasn't. But it felt like it was. It felt like it was a.
Yeah, I think that's something we've been kind of battling recently, to be honest with you, because it just, you know, it's something. It's like anything. When you're in the middle of it, you know, you all you see is what it is.
Yeah.
You don't really get to talk to people outside of that, or just looking in, kind of thing. You know, so I think one of the things we've come to realize is it's had some kind of like. Not stigma, but people are a little bit kind of wary about kind of like dipping a toe in the water and coming along. Fact is, Bruce, they're all big, cuddly, lovely blokes like you. Do you know what I mean? There's such a good group of people that we get on the event that, there's no reason for that at all. And it's really the people that come on it that really make it what it is for me.
Right. Before we crack on, this is very rude of me. I forgot. We should have done at the start. So here's to your health, Steve. Slange.
And to you, sir. I need to open this, actually. Moretti, I like that.
Yeah. This is thanks to Chris in Dubai, one of the chaps that follows the podcast and the channel. Chris, thank you very much, mate. He sent over a couple of crates of...
We're in France here at the moment, so it's Cronenberg here. So.
Oh, lovely job. Yep. Slange.
Cheers. All the best to you.
So, what is the Cannonball? What is the Cannonball Bike Run?
Yeah, I guess, how do you sum it up, really? I mean, it's part motorcycle rally. It's part motorcycle tour, I guess, to a degree. It's certainly an adventure, and it's most definitely a challenge. So it's typically it's a 7-day event. The people that come, they know where they start and they know where they end, but they don't know anything about what's going to happen in between. So, you know, we put a lot of effort in our end to plan out the route and the destinations that we go to. But you only get to find out where you're going that morning. So we actually give out like an old school route book, like a rally style route book that a guys put in their tank bag. And literally you just follow the route, which takes you through all of the kind of best roads. Obviously, that's what we're looking to do. So it's virtually no motorways, a lot of mountain road, a lot of high stuff that we do. But typically taking you through places of interest, along the way. So... essentially, it's a mystery tour, I guess, if you like, from that point of view. The route each day, it could be long, it could be short. It's not really short very often, to be fair. So it's a fair bit. It's a good day's riding every day. Yep. The typical stage would be 400 Ks, I guess. Doesn't sound that long, but it's purely mountain roads.
Yeah, on twisties, that's good day.
Yeah, I mean, we'll do an odd bit of kind of straight stuff if we have to connect between different regions. But typically it's a lot of back road riding, the mountain riding. So it's, like I say, that's where the kind of challenge element comes in terms of being able to follow the route and being able to keep on track. That's essentially what we're doing in terms of the riding side of it. But obviously each night we pre-book the hotels. We arrange, different dining experiences. So you might be in a 5-star hotel one night and in a log cabin by a lake the next. You know, it's just completely unpredictable. It's a journey by design that we take people through. So it's not your kind of regular everyday 3-star, biker hotel. It would be like literally a 5-star hotel one night where the staff are shocked when we roll up. And then, like I say, we haven't done the camping thing yet, but I'm almost tempted to do it one night, just one night.
Looking at your the PR shots and all the promo stuff around the Cannonball Bike Run, is it safe to say it's a party? It looks like it's a party atmosphere on tour.
Yeah, there's been a couple of good times, Ed, I have to say. Yeah. I mean, like I say, I keep coming back to the people because, I mean, what makes it magnificent from my point of view is just the pure diversity of people that you get. And I know kind of diversity is a bit of a buzzword these days. Literally, you couldn't put this group of people together in any other environment. They're from probably last year, we had, I don't know, 55 riders with 15 different nations represented out of that. So they're just completely different people from all over, but they all speak the same language of motorcycle. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So you just get this incredible synergy between everybody. One of the things we're super proud of is the fact that, 80% of our riders on any given year have been before, so it's a bit like a kind of family get together each year. The night before the start each year is almost like the 8th night from the year before. It's just a continuation on. That, like I say, is for me what really makes it unique is just literally the fact that you've got all these diverse people. No one knows what anyone does for a living. No one cares. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, literally, it's just the love of bikes.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about having a good time. So, and it's that element of it that really kind of creates that amazing kind of atmosphere that you get throughout the day and throughout each evening. So it's something we're really happy with.
Yeah. I can. I get that because I've got my own tour company called Chicken Strips, and I've angled that very much to be not like your anti-tour brigade, but for me it's a bike tour with a difference. It's not the usual high-vis stuffy, follow my leader, off you go. We're having a giggle, we're going off on a bike trip with your mates, but they're not your mates. It's all it's all random strangers that come together. Exactly like you say, it's always, I get loads of repeat custom now, and you do get that. It is like you're going away with your mates, but sometimes they're new people that you've never met before, but you end up with a real nice feel about it, don't you?
Yeah, I think one of the other awesome things about Cannonball is that literally you can tour the world. And there's so many cities where our guys are from. Whenever you're in that city, you let them know, and then all of a sudden, I was in Munich a couple of weeks ago. Someone mentioned, stop by this place for a beer. And then there's like 6 Cannonballers there. They all just showed up, all driven in from the German riders that are coming. It's just fantastic. You could literally tour the world in it, It literally is a family,
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, one of the key things about the event as well is the fact that, it's not a tour in that kind of normal respect where like a follow my leader type setup. There's too many riders that ride at too many different paces for that. So, everyone's on the same route, like in theory, because you follow the route book, but, people do get lost. But, what that does allow you to do is obviously, everyone rides at their own pace, so. Mm-hmm. There's no kind of, one of the things that people would naturally assume about Cannonball is that it's a race, it's timed. It's not, it was a little bit like that in the early days, but it certainly isn't now, It's definitely a more relaxed affair. And it's all about having a good time on the bikes, So, like I say, that fact that that everyone's on the same path, you sort of drop in and out of different groups, So, everyone follows at their own pace and finds people that they're comfortable riding with, So.
Gotcha. How did you get into this? How did you find the Cannonball then? I'm assuming you must have seen the movie and it's gone from there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess how it started for us is that, you know, back in the day, so our kind of events company has been going over 30 odd years. So, and back in the day, we used to do a lot of car events as well.
Yeah. Is this adrenaline? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Adrenaline, yeah. So, Nick, my partner at the time, he's retired now, but he had been invited to do the route for the very first Gumball Rally.
Yeah.
And then from that, Nick and I got invited to essentially manage the first Cannonball Run Europe car events in Europe. Uh-huh. So we did two of those as part of that. Came to the conclusion that our partner in that wasn't quite the guy that we thought he was, and sort of decided to part ways. But gotcha. More on that, it was kind of, we had some damn good times, don't get me wrong. But we just kind of found that the car people were just more needy and a bit more kind of, I don't know how to say, I don't want to put anyone down, do you know what I mean? Because we had met some really, really good people on it. But there was definitely that element of, I've got a Ferrari, therefore I am, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, I don't know why or what it is, but bike people are just better people. They honestly are, do you know what I mean? So we've always had that kind of feel. And so when we parted ways on the Cannonball car, we thought, we're going to do this for bikes. We've got to do this for bikes. And we got told you couldn't do it. It's never going to work. And it just, the more we got told that, the more we wanted to do it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So like I said, we just put it together. We just kind of put the word out a little bit between, you know, other riders that we knew. We had 25 people showed up for the first one. Like I say, we got all that publicity off of it. Then 75 riders for the second. We thought, oh my God, wow. It's like literally like a tiger by the tail there. And, you know, and it kind of kicked off from there. But maybe I'll tell you a story about that second event in Germany later. But that was, if that, I'll tell you it now. I'll tell you it now. Because like I said, so we had 75 bikes for the second one. And if I'm honest, we didn't do a good job of like staffing it properly. We kind of used the same kind of setup that we had for year one.
Yeah.
And so we just didn't really have the people on board to kind of control it. But aside from that, we'd kind of chosen this kind of castle in Germany to set it off from. So the whole idea is that this is, you know, it's a secret castle on the top of a hill. No one would know we were there, and we'd set off from there and away we'd go. And so the day before, some of the riders are coming in, got pulled over by the police on the autobahn.
Yeah.
And one of the guys, I don't recall his name here at the moment, but he had a Honda Blackbird, two in his panniers at the back. He had two auxiliary tanks, one auxiliary tank on each side, fully prepped, you know, to do the whole thing without having to stop each day. So anyway, he was the tail gunner of that group of five bikes. As the police have like pulled them into the lay-by, he's decided in his wisdom to like go off and down a motorway.
Of course,
they've chased him down, and in his infinite wisdom, he's just continued the route to the secret castle where we're leaving. So they knew exactly where we were going from. So anyway, the chief of police is there. I get called down, and it's like, oh, so when do you start in the morning then? And we're like, well, it's 8 o'clock. So he goes, okay, we will be here just to make sure everything is good.
Yeah.
And so, of course, they arrived at 10 to 8, but we already left at 7. So they didn't see the funny side of that at all.
Yeah, I'll bet.
No,
I was going to say, do you get problems with the old Bill?
Not anymore. But in those early days, to be fair, we were getting wrapped up in a lot with what was going on with the car rallies. The car rallies were actually causing some problems in Europe. But on that occasion, obviously, you know, we took the piss a little bit there, and they were in the absolute right. And of course,
they brought
the whole cavalry out for us. And literally there was like helicopters out, they were blocking the roads. And like what they essentially did, they kind of got one of the route books of one of the riders, knew where we were going, and just did a go slow process. So they kind of were stopping us all the way along the way. So that first day was a bit of a ball like getting out of Germany, but as soon as we did that, it was all good. But we'd had that. To be honest, a lot of that heat that was coming on in those, at that time, like I say, a lot of it was wrapped up with the car rallies, but we realised that, you know, that this wasn't a good thing. And, you know, ultimately it's going to affect the enjoyment of the people coming. And that's what we didn't want. So that's why we went to Morocco. We took it to Africa.
Yeah.
And we spent 4 years going around Morocco. And then after that, everything had cooled down, and we changed the style of the event. As I say, it's a lot more kind of relaxed. There's no emphasis on speed or anything now.
Yeah.
So it's a different vibe, and we don't get any trouble at all nowadays, to be fair. So.
Yeah, it was the Morocco one I remember seeing. I think it was your first year going to Morocco. That's the one that came on my radar. And it's weird looking back, because I remember seeing it and just thinking, wow, Morocco, oh my God, that's going to be amazing. Yeah. Well, I've been to Morocco quite a few times now on the bike, and it's like, you know, I love going there. It's fantastic riding, and it's a real taste of the adventure, isn't it? But I think it's almost, no, it hasn't lost that uniqueness, but it's not somewhere that I look at and go, oh my God, geez, can you go there? Can I do this? Now I'm like, yeah, I can't wait to get there and have some fun. Great place. Do you still do Morocco then?
We haven't done it. We did it 4 years on the bounce. That was from, I think it was from 2007 to 2010 or 11. There's a lot of call to go back there.
Yeah.
We will go back at some point. The problem is that it's an adventure just to get there. I mean, a lot of our riders come out of Scandinavia. We have a lot of Norwegian and Finnish riders. So for them to ride all the way down to kind of the southern tip of Spain before they even start, it's a big ask, you know. So that kind of plays into it a bit, but for sure we'll go back. For sure we will. I mean, I think there's many, many things we loved about Morocco, and we had some really, really good times there. But I think the best thing had to be free speed. What is free speed, you ask? I asked the same question. So when we first set this up, we thought, okay, we're going into an unknown territory here. So we had some kind of contacts down there, and we thought we're going to need a fixer, you know, to help us through just getting the bikes in and out. You should probably know it's a bit of a ball ache getting just the custom side of things. So
So
we had a fixer that we went down. So on the recce, we were speaking to him. And he's saying, you know, so what class of hotels? We're like, okay, well, 4-star, 5-star if possible, you know, dining, mix, you know, a bit of Moroccan, a bit of international, free speed. I went, free speed? What's free speed? He went, oh, free speed. So, okay, that sounds interesting. That certainly sounds up our alley. What is it? He said, well, we have contacts with the police. And if you want, you know, we can, you know, make it so he's no problem for speeding. And we're like, well, we don't need to speed, but we don't want anybody hassled, and we don't want any tickets, really. Can you do it? You know, and they went, oh, yeah. So anyway, so the invoice comes through. On there's the free speed. It's like, you know, it's a decent number, but it wasn't that high. So And sure enough, we had the full week there. And to be fair, as you know, in Morocco, there's nobody around for the vast majority of the country anyway. So you're not doing anybody any harm anyway. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, at the end of the event, we've had 40 riders have gone round. Everyone's done a whole week of riding 3,000 Ks, not a single ticket. We're at the final hotel, and the chief of police pulls up. I thought, oh God, here we go. The shakedown. So he said, oh, so Steve, you know, how did it go for you? Was it good? I went, yeah, lovely. Yeah, great week. He goes, ah. So you enjoyed it? Yeah. Enjoy the free speed? Yeah. It's all good. He said, oh, so maybe you give me a present. I'm like, oh, here we go. It's like the secondary payment. Yeah, this is where we get. Yeah, you don't leave the country till you pay. I said, no, that would be fine. What would be appropriate? He went, 20 euros.
Sold.
Yeah. So, dang. Yeah. So that was year one. And so we went back another 3 years. So, but we had some, like
and,
I said,
and
we had
it went off every year. Yeah,
well, no, actually.
No. Wow.
Same price every year. But anyway.
I might have to inquire about this free speed next time I go back.
Yeah. But the thing is as well, I mean, it was that first year, it was a real leap of faith because, you know, the fixer said, okay, what we're going to need is that all the registration numbers of all the bikes. We need to know exactly the route and where you're going, the hotels you're staying at. I thought, what are we walking into here? Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, this is like, sounds a bit iffy, but anyway, sure enough, perfect. Everything worked perfectly. So, yeah. But that kind of thing, that's where Africa differs from mainland Europe. Yeah. So. But like I say, those early days, it was a different kettle of fish then. It's different now. So
I quite like the way things work outside of like the Western world, you know, and you go Africa, you go, Well, I've not done Asia, but I've done like Southeast Asia and all those sorts of places, and South America. And it literally is, you know, cash is king. So any issue that you have, cash sorts it, no problem. And okay, there's positive and negatives for that, but all the bureaucracy sort of just disappears, really, when you find someone that just speaks a common language. Right, okay, what? How do we sort this issue? Okay, let's get it done. Bang.
No, exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, life's a game. You know, it's just you've got to know the rules and how to play it, really, you know. And it is a simpler system, quite honestly, because, you know, one way or another, if you'd been a naughty boy, you're going to pay, you know. So, you know, doing it where it's less hassle and less time consuming, like for everybody, just is a better way of doing things, I think.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, Eastern Europe's a bit more kind of flexible like that, we found.
I'm doing the Balkans in June. I'm doing a road trip from Slovenia down to Greece. And I'm doing it via, all the Balkans, basically all Eastern Europe. So it'll be my first time in the likes of Albania and Kosovo and, you know, Macedonia and all these sorts of places. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how that's going to work. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. We did the Balkans in 2019, I think it was. We called it the 12 Nations Challenge. So it was a 7-day event, but 12 countries in those 7 days. And I have to say, it feels different out there. I mean, it really does. I mean, the roads are not as good as some of the other areas we've been to, but the adventure element is right up there. I'd say on a par with Morocco, if not more. I mean, the getting through the borders is a bit iffy, and same thing, money talks. If they ask you, if can you buy them soup or lunch? It's literally €10 in your passport as you hand it over, and then you're through. And the system they've got is awesome, because what they do is they let all the vehicles into their country. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you've got papers or not, but getting out, different story. Once you're in, you're in.
That's right.
So
trap you.
Yeah, just make sure you've got all your papers in order. We're just having to do the same for Turkey, actually. We're going into Turkey this year, so that's another bit of a challenge. Not so much if you've got your own bike in your name, but for the rental bikes, it's a bit more difficult. So.
Oh, yeah, that's a point. And I suppose, the whole Brexit thing must cause an issue as well, does it? With bike coming from lots of different countries?
Not so much. I mean, it's more difficult if, so this year, obviously, with Cannibal, because it's our 20th, we're riding to Asia, you know. So our event's starting in Brno. We were going to finish in Istanbul, but we've added an extra 3 days, so we're going to finish back in Sunny Beach in Bulgaria. And one of the things we're offering this year is like a bike transport service, so you can take your bike to the start and bring it back home again for you afterwards.
Gotcha.
Because it's a long schlep otherwise. I mean, Istanbul and back is, nothing for you, Bruce, of course, but, you know, for us mere mortals, it's not easy, you know. So we've got a bike transport service this year, but where Brexit has affected that, you can't just throw a bike in the back of a van with a transport company without
having
the carnets and the rest of it. So it's all, you know, red tape, but it's all doable.
Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of lads, a lot of the track companies, they were having nightmares initially, you know, just vanning your track bike to like Haref or somewhere like that. It was a nightmare, but I think it all seems to be smoothening. Is that a word? It's a lot smoother now than it used to be. I think everyone's getting used to the process. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair though, I mean, you know, we're a UK company, obviously, but I think last year we had more riders. The year before we had 5 riders out of like 40 odd, you know, so it's really international.
Our
ridership. So. So it's not so many riders actually come out of the UK. We've got a lot of British guys that live in Europe and live in other parts of the world. And we have a lot of American riders actually. Last year, I think we had 12. Oh, it might have even been 14 riders from the US come over. And
really?
Some of those, like the regular guys, they just leave their bikes here. So they here, they fly in and out, and they do Cannibal and they do some other, you know, trips around it as well. So
sorry to interrupt, folks, but just a quick shout out for this week's sponsors, who are, as always, Ultimate Add-ons. Ultimate Add-ons have been back in the podcast for the last few years, and I've been using their products since probably around about 2017, 2018. They specialise in phone holders, so both the mounts that attach to your bike and the protective cases that your phone goes in. Now, these cases are shockproof, they're dustproof. They're the perfect things to put your phone in whilst you're on the bike. And even if you do have a mishap, your phone is nicely protected inside that case. You can still use the phone, you can still use the touchscreen, you can even still use the cameras. They do a wide selection of mounts. I use the ratchet strap, which is actually in their cycle section, but you can pick any one you like for your particular bike or a generic one. It's up to you. Ultimate Add-ons are also doing a number of other accessories, things like action camera mounts. They're also now doing heated grips. They do things like a balaclava, USB, USB-C, power adapters, lots of different things. Head to their website, check out the products, and if you use the code TEAPOT1 with the number 10, TEAPOT110, then you will get 10% off. A massive thanks to Ultimate Add-ons for all your support. And a massive shout out to all of you over in the clan, over on Patreon, patreon.com/teapot1. I literally could not do this full time without your support, folks. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for going that extra mile with your support. You're also the backbone of the Brew Time podcast with all your questions. So keep them coming and we'll go from strength to strength. So how do you pick the route and how do you pick countries for each year?
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's like kind of like, you know, what's your dream? You know, what's your dream? You know, every year we speak to everybody, you know, there's an awful lot of experience between all of our riders about, you know, some of these guys, they do like 30, 35,000 kilometers a year riding, just the leisure riding in the mountains kind of thing. So there's a lot of information there, apart from our own experience, as to where the best places are. So, you know, it's really just pooling together, you know, ambitions as to where you've always wanted to go and kind of piecing it together kind of thing. So it does get more challenging, you know, now we're at year 20. Do you know what I mean? I think we've done, I'd say, the majority of mainland Europe down to Spain. We haven't done Portugal, but I think the roads there are not quite so good.
There's some cracking roads, real good roads in Portugal. Yeah,
we did a Camino themed cannonball a couple of years ago where we went across the north of Spain, which was really good. We were hoping to get into Portugal, but we didn't dip in that far, so we said we'd probably go back, but we haven't done it too much there. But certainly the rest of mainland Europe we've done, Eastern Europe we've done, hence this year we're kind of pushing into kind of Turkey. Scandinavia, we haven't, but our Scandinavian riders, half of them say you must come, it's fantastic. The other half say don't bother, you know. It's, you know, expensive and, you know, difficult sometimes. So
police are really hot on speeding up there for sure. Like Norway,
exactly,
they are
massively. I mean, some of the prices for the they charge for stuff there is pretty high as well, which obviously you know, we don't really kind of vary our price too much each year, depending on where we're going, but we just make sure we spend the budget in the best way we possibly can. You know, so you know, when we go to more expensive areas, we might kind of lower the hotel grade a bit, if you like. Yeah. And then when we go to like cheaper areas like this year, we up the hotel. So like this year, I think we've got 3 5-star hotels, you know, because obviously Eastern Europe's more, you know, it's better value kind of thing.
But there's
no real science to it. It's kind of like, you know, where... what's hot at the moment, where have we always wanted to go? It's the roads really that kind of draw us. You know, we tend not to kind of go to places just because it's the famous city. You know, there's got to have some decent roads that come in and out, you know, ultimately. So we start with the roads and then we build the rest around that, if you like, you know.
Gotcha. So what's your sort of biking history, biking pedigree then? How do you get into biking and get to where you're at?
As a kid, you know, literally as a kid, you know, when I grew up, it was all fizzes and APs. You know, I had an AP 15 as my first bike. You know, back in that day, to be honest, most of what we used to do was like dirt bike riding. So we used to do, you know, have a lot of like made up dirt bikes as kids. As soon as you could afford it, we'd be getting better bikes. So I used to race motocross and enduro back in the day. Didn't really get into bikes so much when I was young. Probably got more back in around about your age. So I moved to America in 2003, and then I passed my test in America, got a bike out there. So that's when I kind of started more my kind of road bike stuff.
Gotcha.
But to be fair, you know, I'm not by my own admission, anything like at the level of the guys that come on our event. Do you know what I mean? Is that I'm not putting myself out as being this like fantastic guy that's super quick. My part of what we're doing here is to bring the people together and put the event together.
Gotcha.
You know, yep. These guys do the riding. They know what they're doing and they don't need us to say anything. You know, we have one rule and one kind of thing in the rider briefing. It says, do not crash. That's all we say. The rest is up to them, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, I've always loved bikes. I've always loved cars as well, to be fair. I mean, I must admit, even though we've kind of dropped some of the other kind of more corporate events that we used to run, we still run an experience for people to drive Formula One cars on Grand Prix circuits in Europe. So,
wow.
You know, bikes are awesome and the performance is awesome on bikes, but it also is on Formula One cars as well. So, you know, but that's our kind of balance of what we do nowadays. It's cannonball and Formula One driving. So,
wow.
It's not a bad life, Bruce. It's not a bad
life. Wow. Sounds it. You're a petrol head. Wow. Is that all under the adrenaline umbrella then?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, like I say, we've just sort of kind of rebranded our company just recently because, like as I said earlier, Nick, my partner, retired a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I'd lived abroad, so you know, I'd lived in America for a while, and then in Spain, and now in France. Nick was running the kind of UK operation with me as kind of turning up for the events when I felt like it, type of thing. But since he's retired, I sort of made one of those kind of big life decisions, which I think you've probably done yourself, where you've kind of got your day job and you've got your dream job. And it was that kind of, how do I transition back again? So in the early days, it was a lot easier because, you know, I'd kind of went off, set up a new business over there and everything was great. But now it's like, okay, I don't have time to do both.
Yeah.
I'm getting on a bit, you know, what do I actually want to do with the rest of my life? So I made a big call to time to kind of just say, okay, all my other business interests I've given up, but I'm like all in full time on Cannonball now. So,
wow.
So what I'm looking to do is kind of take it to the next level, if you like, whereas it's been an awesome event that we've run every year. It's just that where do we take it in the future? You know, so that's the big thing.
I mean, it must be different. It'll be different for you because obviously you sound like you're well seasoned at starting and setting up businesses and having running businesses. But for me, this is the first time I've ever done something like this. And it's been a real, over the last, 4 years now, three and a half, 4 years, it's been a real learning curve for me to move from
you
know, where I was in the old Bill working for the man, you know, working for a big agency, if you like, to all of a sudden, you know, you're the MD, you're the cook, you're the cleaner, you're the marketing guy, you're the accountant, you're everything. It's been hard. Like the first couple of years, it almost took the love and the passion out of it for a while. I really had to sort of stop myself and get hold of it and go, hang on, why are you doing this? Okay, what do you enjoy? Let's focus on that. You need to keep this running. And I'm now progressing into this stage where I'm a control freak. I don't know what you're like, but I'm a real control freak. I want to do everything, but you can't. So you need to delegate it. So it's like, you know, my son, thankfully, is a professional editor. So I've given the odd little project out to him to say, look, any chance you could do that for me? And, you know, graphics, I've got a chap that is starting to help with graphics. So it's slowly just relinquishing the control side of things.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I mean, if I was to give one bit of advice that took me this long to learn, it's like to hire professionals in areas that you don't really know what you're doing. It's easy to think, I'll have a go.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't do everything. And, you know, like I say, since my partner retired, I've lost him and the assistant that went with him. So a lot of the kind of all that side of things that I never really saw for 20 years, I've now kind of taken back on board. So, but what I do, my kind of way of working whenever I take on something is I do everything. Mm-hmm. And then I figure out how, you know, what needs to get done, how I would assume it would get done, and then kind of start feeding it out to other people to help from there.
Yeah.
So, you know, nowadays, I mean, we're not a big business by any means, you know. We've got a good team of people who work with Cannonball. There's kind of 5-6 of us that work on that team, but they're not full-time. You know, mostly it's coming on the event to help with it. A lot of the back-end stuff is done by myself and Lorna, my wife. You know, so we have that same challenge, you know, and we've been, you know, like you, we've been some really tough times. I mean, COVID for people in the events business where the government says that's it, you're shut down, you can't do anything.
Yeah,
that's not easy to navigate, you know, and particularly for 2 years, it's not easy to navigate. The one thing that I'm immensely proud of is that we ran Cannonball every year throughout COVID. We've never been stopped by anything.
So, really?
Yes, exactly. And that, for those 2 years, were the only events we were running. So as an events company, we might have put 35 events on a year. Those 2 years, we did two events, and each year it was Cannonball. And I have to say to the people that did it, absolute respect to those guys, because that's, you know, we never had the numbers that we would have had otherwise, mm-hmm. but they're the same kind of mentality, these guys that are not going to be put down. They're all individuals. Yeah. And, and that was just so awesome to see them show up and for us to run it and do it and go home again. It was absolutely fabulous, you know. So, you know, those 2 years were difficult. And in the early years, I mean, you know, we struggled financially. I mean, Cannibal's not been a big money maker. It's never been about that. It's only been about it has to happen. Who's going to do it? No one. Let's do it then. Mm-hmm. You know, so... yeah, it's not really a money thing. It's a lifestyle thing. I think live your life is your
life.
That's our shtick. Do you know what I mean? That's where we're coming from. It's about making experiences happen that would never ordinarily happen, you know?
So, yeah, absolutely. Love it. Sure. You're talking about COVID there. I kind of miss it. I miss traveling during COVID because I still managed to get away on the bike. I remember I did a 5 or 6 day trip down to Switzerland around the Alps, the Swiss passes, right during COVID in that first year. It's about September time, August, September time, I think I went. And it was, everywhere was empty. You know, like the Eurotunnel was empty. Airports were empty. The roads, there was a bit of traffic. Hotels were empty. Everyone was pleased to see you, weren't they? Businesses, if they were open, it was like, please come in. I missed that.
It was so eerie. It was kind of eerie in a way as well, though, because both our COVID events were both in Italy. So we did, there were so many people that wanted to come to the first Italian one that couldn't because of COVID. We said, we're going to do this next year. We're not the same route, not the same event, but we're coming back to Italy and everyone that was going to come can come again next year, mm-hmm. Which is ultimately what we did. But I mean, because the hotels obviously were struggling, you go to play, we've gone to these huge hotels and we were the only people in there.
And they're
so skeleton staff. You check in, there's a girl checks you in. It's like you ask for a drink. She goes up to the bar and pours you a beer. Next minute, she's cleaning your sheets in the morning. You know, it's literally like weird situations like this. And I just felt like ghost towns, a lot of it. And, Rome, I remember Rome was one of the destinations we went to, and I've always dreamt of going to Rome. And it was just so disappointing. It's like even all the lights were off in Rome as you go around it. And it just felt so, I don't know, it was just underwhelming. Do you know what I mean? And my wife had always wanted to go to Rome as well. And so my boys booked us a trip there for an anniversary a few years later. And I'm so glad I went back because it was, after COVID, it was Rome as it should be. And it was fabulous. Do you know what I mean? But it was not the same at that time, kind of thing. So it was definite plus points with the roads being empty and being able to get around and sort of, you know, not be too bothered by people. But from the event point of view, it was definitely a bit weird at that time. It had a very different atmosphere on the event, I recall.
I bet it did. Yeah. I had the polar opposite experience of Rome when the only time I've ever been was on the bike. It was during a big trip. And my idea was to park my bike outside the Colosseum because I'd Googled it and I was told, you can park your bike outside. So I was like, excellent, I'll do that, get a picture of it. Well, when I got there, I can't remember what day it was, but it was the day they basically pedestrianised a lot of the central roads, like the centre of Rome. But typical Italian, it's like Italian logic. So they just did bit by bit, but there didn't seem to be any logic to how they shut the roads down. So myself and about 8,000 cars and mopeds, we ended up in the middle of Rome, and then they just started shutting all the roads behind us. So it was like you couldn't. It was like a National Lampoon, you know, when they're constantly going down around the roundabout, around the Eiffel Tower. Look, kids, the Eiffel Tower. I just kept seeing the Colosseum, and I kept getting sent down all these different roads, and we just felt like you were just going ever decreasing circles. And in the end, I just mounted a pavement, went down a pavement, and got out of Rome. I'm gutted. I'm going to have to go back and see it properly.
Yeah, one of our riders, actually, Mark, he runs a super White Freaks. He's a demon with a drone, and he was on that Rome event, and he like got up at like 5:30 in the morning to go out and get this footage of all of the the landmarks there. And he flew, you're not allowed to, but he flew his drone through the Colosseum. He just got some fantastic footage.
You're kidding me.
But he did just because it was COVID as well. Yeah. It almost felt like going back in time because there's just nobody around. Kind of all the normal traffic, just wasn't there.
But, it's like 28 days later. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you got some really good stuff there. But that's when you go to the cities, it's I said when we did the Italian event, you can't go to Italy and not go to Rome, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But there definitely are some cities, particularly the capital or the big cities, there's a lot of, the roads dry up around there. So you kind of, quite often, the roads are not so good getting in and getting out type of thing. So I think it's important to make sure that, what you're doing when you go there is worth the kind of sacrifice of not being up in the mountains or not having the great roads as you come in and out type of thing. So,
yeah, absolutely. There's got to be a payoff, hasn't there, for people, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, one of the frustrations we have, obviously, is just finding hotels big enough to cater for our group because it's, we get a good amount of girl riders on the event, actually, but it's predominantly men, obviously, predominantly twin rooms. So you've got to have a decent sized hotel that's got enough twin rooms and a pool and secure parking, to support the event. And sometimes they're out in the country, but often you have to dip into the cities to get that, So
yeah, absolutely. And we're also sponsored by the Influencer Store. Now I've got some blurb to read out for them. The Influencer Store helps you build your brand, big or small, providing you with a solution and apparel. We help you to increase your fan base while supporting you with starting your own influencer clothing line with nothing more than just an idea and a design, and there are no hidden costs. For more info, come check us out at theinfluencerstore.co.uk or drop us an email at online@influencerstore.co.uk for more information. Now, all my current merch over at teapot1.com, that is all handled by Roger and Charlotte and their family over at the Influencer Store. So thank you for all your support. And lastly, a big shout out to all of you who are either watching a podcast or listening just now on your platform of choice. If you can share with your mates, tell people about the podcast and help spread the word, that really does help. And if you're listening on things like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, if you can follow and leave a review or rating, 5-star is preferable, of course, then that would be absolutely fan-dabby-dozy. All right, folks, let's get back to the podcast. Right, I'm not sure if you know how Brewtime works, Steve, but I post up on socials and on my Patreon to say who the next guest is, and that gives people the opportunity to leave questions for us to go over. Sometimes the questions are specific to who you are or who the company is that you're from or the product or the topic. Other times they're just totally random. So,
should I get my lawyer involved there, Bruce?
the one saving grace for this, Steve, is it's not live. All right. So if anything's out of order, let me know.
Against that. Far away.
First off, we'll go across to the clan over on Patreon. So it's patreon.com/teapot1. First one, Andy. Evening, both. Hope this finds you well. Just a couple of quick questions. What are the common characteristics of the riders who have successfully completed the run?
Good question. As I kind of alluded to earlier, there is no typical cannonballer. But I mean, what they all can do is ride a bike, So, for sure, for the stuff that we do and the mileage that we cover and how kind of intense that it is, you have to know what you're doing. I wouldn't say come on Cannonball if you've got less than 2-3 years riding experience. We actually make that a condition there of entry. So know what you're doing, but I think the most important thing is to be able to get on with people. Our kind of feel is that the perfect cannonballer is someone that comes along and their presence makes everything better for everybody else there.
So
that's where our thing comes from. It's the communication and the kind of synergy between the people. If you want to come and race, show everybody how great you are, it's not for you. We're not interested in that, So if you want to come, have a great time, meet some great people, ride the best roads, have that kind of mindset, you're welcome. That's the main thing, I feel, is having a good attitude and coming, being prepared to have a good time and intending to have a good time. So
awesome. I think a lot of people would be quite relieved to hear that. So I think a lot of people have a preconception, the ones who know about the Cannonball Bike Run, yeah, or certainly the ones who see pictures of it, I think they think it's just going to be, you know, Power Rangers, knee down, oi oi mentality, and, you know, a lot of the biking community these days,
yeah,
they're like me, they're getting on a little bit, and, you know, and they maybe think, well, would I fit on something like that? But I got to admit, it sounds very much like what I want my tours to be like, you know.
You and I are youngsters on this event, believe me. We're youngsters. I mean, I'm actually not even joking to some degree. I mean, it's our average age has really crept up over the years because, like I say, we have so many repeat customers. I mean, you know, Colin and Thomas, they're our two most experienced ballers. They've been 14 times. This is their 15th year this time. You know, so you kind of almost grow up with people, you know. And that's one of the things we've actually recognised, is that the average age over the 20 years has really kind of crept up. Mm-hmm. I'd say the average age is probably mid-40s, I would say. You know, but we've got, you know, so one of the things we brought in last year was a new young rider initiative. So we're actually offering a sponsorship to give 600 euros off the entry fee for young riders. There's no strings attached other than they've got to have some social and post their experiences on their social. So we're actively trying to bring in young riders to do that. But on the upper end, we've got Terry. Terry's an absolute legend. He's 70 this year. I think this is his sixth Cannonball.
Good lad.
Yeah, I'm not the tallest guy in the world. Yeah, 5 foot something. Terry's like well shorter than me, and he rides everything. Do you know, he just puts me to shame. So, but yeah, so I mean, you know, it's that is definitely one of the misconceptions that we want to get over, is the fact that people feel a little bit intimidated. There is absolutely no reason to, and you know, everybody that comes realizes that. The people that don't kind of won't. But yeah, I mean, there's you know, but that, all that said, I mean, we've got some serious riders on it. You know, we've got Jeremy's a pro AMA racer. He races in the superbikes in America. So we've got some really good riders. They know what they're doing. But you know, no one's out to sort of, you know, to say, look at me, how good I am. Everyone's just out to have a good time. You know, so there's all different levels of riding through from, you know, not raw beginners, but, you know, not novice riders, I guess, from you know, an international touring point of view, through to, like, super experienced guys, is, you know, that do it all the time. So, yeah.
Now, obviously, the original Cannonball, the film Cannonball, is a race with the prize at the end. Is there, like, a prize at the end of your events?
There is, I mean, the most prestigious prize is the Spirit Of. So that prize is given every year to the person that brought more to the event for other people's enjoyment than anyone else. So, you know, there's like I said, there's no timing on what we do. It's just purely about, you know, having a good time. So we give out trophies for all different, you know, a lot of stuff happens over the course of 7 days of 50 people riding 3,000 Ks, you can imagine. So there's a lot of stories that come out of that. And so we give trophies out every year for that. We also have our legends. Our legends are the people that bring in that extra kind of colour, enthusiasm, enjoyment for everybody else. That they're the real characters of the event. So we have our legends awards that we give out each year. But yeah, there's no timing for it, you know. And it's probably worth talking as well, if you don't mind, just about the history of Cannonball and how we came to be.
Yeah, please do.
Where our part in the story is, because, you know, as you say, I think most people, when they talk about Cannonball, they just think of the movies, right? For the 80s kind of comedy movies, where it was the kind of car races in America. And, you know, but those were actually based on a real life race that a journalist called Brock Yates put together in the 70s. So, you know, at the time, the national speed limit in the US was 55 miles an hour. And kind of his objection to that was this event, which was unsanctioned. It was a race. It was an unsanctioned race that was from the Red Bull garage in New York to the Portofino Inn in LA. So it was a coast to coast race. They did that in the early 70s. I think they did four events in the early 70s and another one in 79. So that was kind of what spurred the movies off, if you like. But the name of that event was actually the Sea to Shining Sea Memorial event for a guy called Erwin Baker. And Erwin Baker was a motorcyclist from the early 1900s. And so the whole, where the cannibal name came from was him. And he was like, I think today, you know, you'd have to put him up on the par with like the likes of you guys that have do worldwide stuff, because to ride coast to coast on those early bikes, I think it was 1908, I think his first coast to coast record was set.
Gee whiz.
I mean, there wasn't even a road network, do you know what I mean? So I mean, how they did it, I have no idea. But his name was Erwin Baker. He got the name Cannonball because Cannonball was the train that Casey Jones used to drive. I don't know if you remember that. But so that name originated there as a motorcyclist. And that guy did 143 coast-to-coast attempts. And he would charge the – he didn't have any particular allegiance to any motorcycle brand, so whether it was Harley or Indian or whatever. Yeah, his deal was no new record, no fee. So he would only get paid if he set a new record and broke his own record. So this guy did 143, 3,500-mile coast-to-coast trips on early 1900s motorcycles, and that's where it originated from. So it's always been a motorcycle story. And so, you know, for us to kind of, you know, bring it back again.
Bring it back,
Since 2005. Feels very valid to us because we always get this, oh, yeah, you're just copying the car movies. It's like, no. Mm. That's not where it started. That was, you know, so it's all part of the history. We're just doing our little bit now and keeping the thing going, you know. So,
do you have a plan for the event then? Is there like, have you got like a pinnacle, something that you're aiming for? Or is it just a case of, we just want to keep building the brand, make it better every year, and basically just keep going down that path?
Yeah, I mean, the event itself has a plan. I mean, like I consider it a journey. You know, we take a lot of care into the rhythm of the event. You can't have every night, you know, some kind of wild party night. It's just not going to work, you know. So we have destinations where for the guys that like to go out and get a bit involved and get some action, there's stuff there. Equally, you know, the next night it might be, we love these hotels that you find.
Do you mean museums and libraries, Steve? Is that what you're talking about?
I don't know what they do, Bruce. You know, I point them in the right direction. I see them in the morning. Now,
there's never any pictures or video, though. I'm not sure.
Well, number one rule is what happens on Cannonball stays on Cannonball. So you'll have to come to find out.
Say no more.
I mean, obviously the event itself, like I say, we have a very careful journey that we take people through in terms of the rhythm. You know, even when if we've had a couple of hard days, we'll follow up with a shorter day so that everyone's got a chance to recharge, because from a safety point of view, you know, we can't be having people absolutely exhausted. So
yeah, I get that.
We take a lot of care into that side of things. But for the company itself, yeah, like I say, I mean, I've come back into running it full time now after 10 years in the wilderness living in Las Vegas. Another story. I'm looking to build the event. I mean, one of the things about the event that we're very much aware of is that you can't just pack more and more people on it. You lose the magic of the kind of human aspect of it if you do. So our plan currently is that we've got to kind of get the word out there a bit more about Cannonball than we've done in the past, but we're going to introduce a feeder event, which is a much lower price, and it's like a taster of Cannonball, if you like. So it'll be a 3 or 4 day event. We'll typically run it in the areas where our captive audience is, so it's easier for them to get there and back, lower cost. Yeah. And just run that as a way for people to kind of see if it's for them without making a kind of bigger step to kind of come on the main event. Gotcha. So that's very much in the plan. And then, but I guess our big thing that we're doing is working on Basecamp. And the idea for Basecamp is that, it occurred to us is that, you know, we've got so many good people, it's almost criminal to only get together once a year, you know, and all these guys are out doing different things and riding different areas at different times anyway. So we want to kind of make that easier to do. So what we're doing at the moment, we're in the process of purchasing a property in Italy, and I'm in France working on a property that we're developing here, where it's going to be kind of a second home, not just for cannonballers actually, but we're going to open it up to a broader moto audience. So, and the idea is that, you know, if you want to get to the Pyrenees or the Alps, you've got 2 or 3 days of flats to get over, mm-hmm. all the time, the tires, the fuel, the hotels and the BS that includes, mm-hmm. you know, flying nowadays in and out of here and where we've got the place in Italy, it's just so easy and cheap. You know, I booked a flight back to London 2 days ago for 2 weeks time and I paid €20, you know, so it makes no sense to kind of to ride in and out really from my point of view. So what we're going to provide is a properties where people can store a second or a third bike here if they want. They can take a bike from us or from other members, actually. We're going to have a peer-to-peer rental system and essentially offer a fly-ride system whereby you can fly in and out whenever you want. If you want to stay at base camp, you can. Overnight, you can store your bike there all year or for a month or for a week or whatever, however long you want. We'll have events running that are based around all the things that are going on around each base camp. And it's essentially a lifestyle membership club, private for members only, not open to the public. So there's none of that. Get to the hotel and you've got, you know, other guests there turning your nose up at the bikers that just walked in. It's our own thing, designed as very much a second home type of vibe, not a hotel, not a B&B. You're in your own home, not someone else's. And just a really cool place to hang out. The idea being that, you know, we'll provide the routes around each base camp that you can ride each day, whether it's a half day or full day. You can ride between base camps. So fly into one, pick your bike up, ride to the other, drop it there, fly back from there. And if this mad idea works, then we'll build it out and hopefully have a network of properties across the whole of the Pyrenees and the Alps and the whole of Europe so that you can, you know, literally not run out of roads to ride, really. So that's our kind of new thing that we're working on currently. So. Wow. Very, very excited about that. Very excited.
Wasn't expecting that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, that's a scoop, actually. This has not gone out to anyone. Our own Cannibal people know a little bit about it. But yeah, so that's, we were hoping to get it launched this year. Italy's been delayed a little bit with some bureaucracy there about the property. But so I think it'll be next year that we actually launch.
Gotcha.
But, so yeah, it'll be like storage only if you just want to store your bike there. But everything else beyond that, if you, you know, as you want, you know, it's going to be the plan for that. So
awesome.
So yeah, that's our little plan.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, man.
Yeah.
Where do I sign? Yeah. Andy's got a second question. He said, lastly, excluding the rider, what's the most common cause of not completing the route?
KTMs.
I'm so glad you said that. I'm not saying anything other than
yeah. To be honest, it's amazing that, like, you know, the actual, I mean, we have a kind of unspoken no man left behind policy. So you know, one of the things that we offer is probably a bit outside of what people would expect is that we have a support vehicle, actually. So each year no one goes with their own luggage, so we have a van that moves your luggage each day, so you don't have to worry about baggage, weight, anything. So we do that, but we also, this year we're just building it now, we've got a dedicated support vehicle that will come through the stage afterwards, so if anybody has a breakdown or a minor off or any kind of issue, we can collect their bike, collect them, get them to the hotel and then deal with the problem from there. So nobody gets left behind on the stage. But yeah, I mean, it's breakdowns, really. Amazingly, Ducatis, I can't remember a Ducati ever breaking down. I might be wrong, but
really?
Yeah, but there's a lot of, I'm going to get in trouble for this, because there's so many KTMs we have on the event now. You know, it's like an orange sea moving through the mountains, like, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's breakdown would be the main thing. Yeah, there's always the chance of having an off. Shit happens.
It's a tour, isn't it? These things happen.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it's the combined mileage of all of our riders over the 20 years we've been doing this is the same as going around the earth 52 times. So I know you've done it once. I don't know how many times you come off in that time, but 52 times is what we've done it. Yeah. 52 times is what we've done it collectively. But yeah, I mean, like I say, I think because of what we do, how we do it, everyone finds their own group to ride with at their own pace. So that definitely helps on that side of things. But yeah, I mean, it's just the mechanical side of not getting around. Yeah, I can't think of anything else other than that, really. So,
is there like a common mechanical issue that you have?
No, I mean, there's a lot of guys get through a lot of tyres.
Mm.
That kind of this year, actually, again, because we've got this sort of, we normally rent in vans for the purpose, but what we're doing there is we've got our own, we're going to build our own kind of setup in the back of it. So one of the things we're going to offer this year is like the facility to change tyres on the event. So when you get kind of out into the, you know, the like Balkans or Turkey, and you know, just, you can't just stop and grab a tyre, you know, it takes a bit more planning. You know, most of the guys, they'll get around on the same tyres, not a problem. We have some keen riders that go through one or two in the week. Yeah. So we're having the facility this year for them to change tyres and put their own tyres on the van from the start. So we've got that. But there's no specific mechanical problem. I could say that's the main thing. It's most people get round most of the time. You know,
yeah.
Last year we had Jace, the guy from Australia. He come off, I think, on day two or three. You know, we went there, picked him up, picked his bike up, bumps and bruises, nothing major. It could have been bigger, but it wasn't. Yeah, he was lucky. And then we picked him up, he got along. We got to Bratislava. He said, you know what, I feel good, I'm going to ride. So he rented the bike there. Yeah, his other bike was sent back. He rented a bike and he got to the end, and he was spirit of the event. I mean, it's that never say die attitude. Do you know what I mean? So he won it that year for that kind of mindset, really. So one way or the other, we get round. So
love it. I'm so glad you mentioned KTM. Have that, Sam Vincent. I get so much abuse because I'm a BMW. You know, I've got the GS. So have that KTM. Have that.
Yeah. We get lots of BMs on it as well, lots of GSs. You know, there's no typical bike for it, actually, I have to say. And a lot less sport bikes than there used to be. We used to get an awful lot of sport bikes, and they're a dying breed, it seems, amongst our guys anyway. So a lot of them are on bigger adventure bikes. But plenty of BMWs. I think we've got a couple of the new M bikes on it this year, I think. We'd be happy to see those. KTM, BMW, not so many Japanese bikes anymore. I mean, I don't know if that's just a general thing, but you don't really see them too much. Got a couple of diehards that just won't let it go. But it's mainly KTM followed by BMW is the most common brands that we get on the event. So.
Yeah, it's got KTM written all over it, hasn't it? Cannonball Bike Run's just got KTM written all over it.
I have to say, I mean, and from that, it's the Super Duke 890R. Yeah. I think last year we must have had five or six of those. I bet it's just a great bike for the event because they're not carrying any luggage. We're doing all that for them. It's just about the riding.
You carry the luggage as well, do you? In the support?
Yeah. So you just ride with what you need that day, really. So what we say to people, you've got to take the route book. So they either tape it to their tank or on their tank bag, and they take a pair of flip flops and some swim trunks because they get there before the luggage van does most of the time. and so they're in the pool, you know, when they get there without having to wait for us to arrive, you know. So,
wow. next one, Charlie Callard. Evening, gents. Couple of questions from me. Firstly, for Steve, what would you say is your top three most memorable times from all the years of the Cannonball?
Oh God. how long have we got, Bruce?
as long as you like.
Yeah. Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, there's so many. I mean, so many. It's not easy because, like I say, you know, the what happens on Cannonball stays on Cannonball rule negates me from telling everything, you know. But, oh God, Special Mike has to be up there, I guess.
Special Mike.
So, like a Special Mike, yeah. So, like I say, you know, no one talks about work on Cannonball. No one really cares about what people do. Special Mike, he just happened to volunteer the fact that he was a dustman. He didn't have an awful lot of money. He was coming for the first time on this old, I think it was a 916 Ducati that was literally held together with hope and string. Do you know what I mean? and this was Morocco. It was the first Moroccan one.
Wow.
So, and we just knew in the build-up that he wasn't particularly well prepared. Do you know what I mean? So he's set off to get the 2,000 miles, whatever it is, to get from the UK down to Tarifa to get across to Morocco.
Yeah.
And we get a call from him. He calls into the office and he goes, "Hey, this is Mike." He said, "Oh, you've made it. Fabulous." He goes, "Yeah, yeah, I've made it to Calais. I've just got off, just got off the ferry." He goes, "What's French for south?" he had no map, no idea about what he was doing, where he was going. And we thought, okay, that's the last we'll see of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then lo and behold, there we are.
He rocked up.
He rocked up. Not only did he rock up, he had this, the bike made it, just barely by that point. But he had no kit, no nothing. And, you know, so he set off on the first day and he's got like a, he's riding, like, no gloves. He's riding in a sweatshirt and he comes past the camera guy. So he's like misfiring. I think he's misfiring as he goes past. All this sweatshirt's flapping up his back kind of thing. Anyway, we get to the hotel that night. There's a big crowd in the bar around Special Mike. And his back is absolutely red. I thought, oh, fuck, he's come off. It was sunburn. He was so sunburned. he couldn't ride. Anyway, we cobbled some gear to get together for him for the rest of the event. But yeah, he was a good memory. But yeah, I mean, there's too many to say. I mean, the Moroccan police one, you can't not forget that. But the free speed.
Free speed, yeah. Special Mike, I love that. That's brilliant. Yeah. That's all you need to say, isn't it? Special Mike. That's it. Yeah. Done.
I guess another one, since we're on stories, another one that did spring to mind was Pig Dog. So, again, this was for Morocco. This was the second year in Morocco. And we thought, you know, if you break down in Morocco, the chances of finding a rental bike is like slim to none. So we thought, all right, if anyone does have a mechanical problem, what we're going to do is bring a bike so that if you have a problem, you can, yeah, we've got a bike, we can wheel it out the van and away you go type of thing. So we bought Pig Dog. Pig Dog wasn't the most modern bike by any means. And the seat, literally, you spent an hour riding it. You'd be walking like John Wayne for the rest of your life. It was just so uncomfortable. I think it was an old GSX Suzuki. I can't remember what it was, but she had a certain ingrained character to it kind of thing. So, and I think what it acted as like a kind of disincentive to not mess up type of thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That year, everybody got round, incident-free, no problems at all. And so we're finishing in Tangier, back at the north of Morocco. And then we've got this like fantastic 5-star hotel on the beach. And so everyone's like hanging out by the pool, just getting ready for dinner that night. And we can hear like, you know, some of the boys have broken into the van, got Pig Dog out, and they're like ripping up and down the beach in front of this hotel in Pig Dog.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Anyway, so that wasn't enough entertainment for them. So they decided in the end to ride it into the sea. So by this stage, I mean, it's not nightfall now. And there's a photo somewhere, again, it's classified, but one of our boys is on it naked in the Mediterranean, just like with Pig Dog wide open. And it's literally spitting its internals out the exhaust.
Oh, no. So
just that. We didn't really care. But anyway, so funny enough, now I think of it, that actually particular individual is now on the staff team. So he qualified. And he's a bike cop as well, funny enough. But anyway.
Yo, I'm not surprised. I am not surprised.
Yeah, but no names, but he's now on the staff team. But anyway, so the next morning, we're going back onto the ferry. And so I'm in the camera car, which at the time was an M5 BMW. And Nick, my partner, as we were rolling into Tangiers the night before, we were almost out of fuel, but we were late. We were like almost last on the stage, so we had to kind of catch up.
Yeah.
And anyway, so we were almost out of fuel. So we drop in to get some fuel. I said, quick splash and dash, Nick, you know, let's get going. So he jumped back in the car. I'm driving. He's fueled it. I said, that was quick. I said, yeah, we've driven off. I said, that was quick. How much did you put in? He went, a fiver. I said, a fiver? He said, let's go V10, 5-litre M5. I said, we're still 10 kilometres from the hotel.
Yeah.
Anyway, that happened. So the following morning, we're now going off to the ferry to get back to Europe. As we're driving the M5 up the ramp onto the ferry, it's run out of gas.
No.
And so I've literally rolled in. And then just behind me, to rub salt into the wounds, I'm not going to say his name, but the aforementioned culprit who destroyed Pig Dog the night before rolls up in on Pig Dog, and it's like,
on Pig Dog.
It's just like, anyway, we've rolled, so the Pig Dog's destroyed, the car's out of fuel. At the other end, like, everyone's disappeared because we had a final stage in Spain. We've rolled off the M5, and now, and this was the year when they had the terrorist attack in Marrakesh. I don't know if you remember that bomb went off in the market square.
Yeah.
So there was quite a high, terrorist alert. So anyway, so the car's out of fuel, and there's like massive lot of open area. I've had to walk across to the customs, explain, said, look, car's out of fuel. Here's my passport. They said, okay, there's a fuel station up the road. Gone up there. They don't have a petrol can. All they had were these, I've only ever seen it in the south of Spain, these like clear plastic bags that you put the fuel in. So anyway, I've got that. I filled up this plastic bag. Now I'm walking back across.
With across a bag of
through
fuel.
The customs area during the terrorist high alert.
Suntanned and sweating.
Yes, with this bag of fuel looking like a suicide bomber. I thought, I'm going to get a headshot any moment here. So that one stuck out a bit as well. You'll have to ask the cannibals. I mean, they're the guys that have all the stories. That's the thing, you know. There's so many things happen every day. Yeah. You can't keep track of it all, you know. So.
Yeah, and imagine the stuff that you don't get to hear about as well, like the proper old stuff.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. So.
Awesome. Right, question for both. So the world's gone to shit. It's full Mad Max style. All the major cities are now surrounded by high walls, big gates and guns. Your job is to deliver different packages between each city. What vehicle are you using and what are you doing and what are you doing to it so as not to get caught by bandits and looters? Wow, Charlie, your mind goes some funny places. Right, Mad Max, end of the world vehicle. What are you taking? What are you doing?
Well, if it's, are we off-road here or are we on-road? I guess that's the big question. But
I think it would have to be capable of doing both, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, we've got to set one of GS, haven't we?
Yeah, do you know, I was thinking that, but it says delivering different packages between each city.
I mean, you've got the luggage capacity, you've got the whole lot.
You've got the big boxes, haven't you? Yeah.
I mean, they're hard to beat, aren't they? I mean, they're
best bike in the world. Best bike in the world.
Yeah, they are awesome machines.
We can't say GS. Do you know how much hate I'm going to get if we say GS? Yeah, GS then. But what are you going to do to it? What would you do to the bike?
Well, I guess if it's that kind of that Mad Max world, we need our Blackbird man, don't we? With the external fuel tanks, we've got to have those.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, if it's a chase, I mean, you can just outlast the other people, can't you? So we've got to have these auxiliary fuel tanks, I imagine. I don't know, some machine gun on the front. That sounds good. You know,
it's got to have a big ass gun. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
RPG somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm up for this, Charlie.
Yeah.
I mean, where are we going?
Well, actually, I mean, what maybe I should refer back to the cannibal support van, actually. So when we sort of floated the idea of like support van, we put it out to all the cannibal communities. Like, what do we need here, guys? You know, what are the, you know, practical elements that we need? And so we had a few sensible people said, oh, yeah, tyre change ability.
Yeah.
I think the winning vote was the stripper pole on the roof rack, the top shelf bar inside, and the firework dispensers, actually. So maybe we could just incorporate that into the bike that we choose for this. For
love
this,
it.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, you're talking about support vehicles there. I had a support vehicle saved my arse in Russia when I was doing the world trip. I don't know if it's still going on now, but they had a race back then. This was 2013. They had a race that went from St. Petersburg all the way across to Vladivostok. Basically, it's the width of Russia, 10,000 kilometers. Okay. And these riders did it in 10 days. So it's obviously, it's 1,000 kilometers a day was the target. And they had a support van that followed, which was driven by the guy that came up with the idea for the race. And his name, I shit you not, and you can Google this guy, was Gennady Filosof Shatov. And he was the first Russian to ride solo around the world. Yeah. And it just so happened our paths crossed right in the middle of Russia.
Yeah.
I'd been bombing along the road and happened to catch up with two guys that were in this race. And we started having a bit of fun. You know, they were getting a crack on. So we're having some fun. And yeah. I happened to hit like a, they have molehills of like tar over there where the tar gets really hot. The big trucks sort of at the bottom of hills, they bundle up, they bunch up the tar, and then as it cools, it basically just, it sets like a solid molehill of tar in the road. Right. And I hit one at like 80, 90 mile an hour, and it just snapped the subframe again on the Gixxer. Yeah. So these two guys I was with were just like, yeah, don't worry about it. We've got a support truck. We'll call them up. So, oh, thanks very much. Cheers. So they phoned and they said, yeah, the guy's coming. He'll be here, but he'll be a while. So we were there for about 6 hours, 7 hours waiting for this van to come back. But everybody stopped. Everyone was obviously catching us up who was in this race, and they all stopped. Everyone stopped at the side of the road, and because they're rushing, like the vodka came out and they had like tins of Spam. The Spam got opened and they were cooking it by a blowtorch. And like we ended up, a couple of Polish guys were on the way to Mongolia. Well, they stopped because they saw us at the side of the road. So they got out their vodka and we just had a party at the side of the road. But eventually this guy turned up. This Gennady chap turned up in his van, and wow, what a character, man! He looks like a pirate, you know. Like if you Google him, you can see the picture. Yeah. He's got long hair, and he wears like a black and white striped sleeveless top, and he's got this scar that goes across his face here. And he told me in the van, because he basically put me in the van, and I spent 24 hours in the van with him as he drove me to the next city to, and he organized to repair my bike and all sorts. He was a total legend. But he was telling me the story of how he got it. So when he was crossing Africa, going down through Africa, and he said he got jumped by three guys just out on the road, and they started attacking him with machetes. And he basically said, well, I walked away and they didn't, but they got my face. And he stitched his own face back together.
Sounds like a cannonball to Bruce. Bring him along, mate.
It totally popped into my mind when you were chatting about it. I thought, God, this guy's the Russian version of it. I remember we got in the van, we got stopped by the old Bill. I've told this story to people loads in talks that I do and stuff. But we got stopped by the old Bill, and he just turned to me and he said, it's no problem, it's okay. He got out the van, and I'm watching in the, you know, the wing mirror of the van there.
Yeah.
He got out and he walked straight up to this copper, and the copper was like, you know, a typical Russian copper, great big hat, and almost like swaggered his way up to Gennady. Gennady said something, and this copper just went all upright, saluted, turned round and got back in his car.
Okay.
I remember just thinking, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Everywhere you went, he was just like a celebrity. Yeah, it was like, wow, who is this bloke? But yeah, I think he's your Russian counterpart. He's the...
the thing is, though, I mean, when you get out in these places, you know, when stuff happens, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to call up the local dealer and get a part. You know, that was the one standout thing about Morocco, is like the guys there, like in these towns, you had a problem, you pull up, they're so resourceful, they'll get you back on the road one way or the other. I remember there was one, Morris, one of our American riders, awesome guy, so many stories for him, but he had a leak on his radiator, in the deepest Morocco. It was getting worse and worse and worse, blowing out the coolant. Anyway, it's pulled up. They fixed it with soap, paprika, and tobacco.
Love
it. Could you not? And he thought, oh, I'll get it fixed when I get home. He never touched it again. It's good to this day. Yeah, it's just like crazy. There's all these ways of fixing stuff, you know, that, you know, us Westerners have no clue about, you know. So
exactly, because they have to be. They have to be resourceful. Because there is no quick fit, is there, or AA to come and help. You break down, you've got to sort it. Get yourself back on the road.
Yeah. I mean, did you ever get any times where you just got stuck, you broke down, you couldn't get a part, or?
I never ever found myself absolutely stuck. I crashed in Japan quite spectacularly, which was all my own fault, and smashed the bike up. So I ended up living with an Aussie expat and his Japanese family for about 3.5 weeks, almost 4 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And he basically I was going to say helped rebuild, but he did it. He rebuilt the Gixxer, you know, and got it back on the road, and he sourced all the parts for me because, you know, I crash a Suzuki in Japan, but it's like their version of Trades Fortnite. So everywhere's shut, but he, Japan has its own version of eBay. So he, because he spoke fluent Japanese, he was just on there and spoke with all his bike mates, and we got all the parts. Yeah. I needed new forks and all that malarkey. And he got the bike back on the road, and that was that. It's just weird that you must see this all the time, especially when you go to places like Morocco on the cannonballs. But people just pull together, don't they? Like, whether it's on the cannonball or totally random strangers that you meet when you're out there, the overwhelming thing I got from my travels was that people are good. People are overwhelmingly good. There's arseholes out there, but most people will help. Most people will do what they can.
Yes, especially, you know, I mean, if you it's like anything, you show respect to people.
Absolutely.
You know, that comes back, you know, and it's, you know, that was another amazing thing about Morocco is that you could be somewhere, and, you know, I just remember there's places there where the skies, I've never seen anything like it. The sky is just so big. Yeah. It's very hard to explain, I guess, where it was just so flat. Yeah, you'd be literally in the middle of nowhere. And we had on our route, you know, we did the recce, it was fine. Got there on the actual event, the bridge, a bridge had gone. There was, we just, I think, just washed away. And we were probably 100 Ks into the stage on this one road that led to there kind of thing. But it's the same throughout Morocco. You think there's nobody around, and then you stop, and they just start appearing. People just start appearing, you know, and then they're all there ready to help, like, you know. And anyway, we managed to get the bikes across, manhandled it, with the guys that just showed up to help us, and we're off again. So, but I mean, it's all part of the adventure, isn't it? I mean, that's really what people want, you know.
Yeah, and, totally.
And that is, you know, if it was just an easy tour and every day was easy and everything was perfect, it wouldn't be a story to take home, you know. So
that's when the adventure starts, isn't it? When something goes wrong or something out of the ordinary happens, that's when the trip becomes an adventure.
I mean, obviously, we're fortunate in that aspect because, you know, if you go around the world solo, I mean, you are on your own, you know. On Cannonball, you've got 45, 50 other riders around you that are all willing to help, you know. So if you're by the side of the road, they're coming through, you know, that it doesn't take the adventure element out of it, but it takes the ball ache out of it if you do have a problem, I guess. I mean, I love all that stuff, you know. It's, I guess that's really, for the future. We've got, we've kind of fixed on what we're doing this year with Turkey and everything. But, you know, at some point, we do need to go a bit further afield, you know, even if it's a flight too, and do it there. So any tips you've got, I'm very open to listening. You know, it's a big wide world out there. You know, there's a lot of places we'd like to get to, I think. So.
As you were, when you were chatting about where you go and going further afield, it's a real shame that they're having issues there at the moment, but Ecuador in South America has fantastic roads, but so does Colombia. Colombia is a great ride.
Yeah, well, one of our riders, Nate the Exploder, actually, I won't talk about the explosion story because that actually was quite serious. But Nate the Exploder, he's a Cannonball regular. I think this year's his 10th or 11th, I think. He has been living there in Colombia for the last 3 or 4 years. He's American. He just sold up and said, "Okay, I'm done. I'm just, you know." He's been in basically around South America and Colombia for the last 3 or 4 years. We see him once a year on Cannonball, and he goes back again. So, but he says there he loves the craziness of it. It's like, you know, it's a bit. Whereas the Western world is all very kind of, you know, bit kind of tame nowadays. It's still the Wild West out there, I think, you know, he was saying. So, but I've never spoken to him actually about the roads. That didn't occur to me. Because he lives, you know, he's another US rider that leaves his bike here in Europe. So I'm not sure that he does a lot of riding out there actually, but that quite surprises me. I wouldn't have thought that actually. So,
Honestly, like Ecuador was a real surprise. Some fantastic roads there. And then I crossed into Colombia before I. To get across the Darien Gap, I flew the bike from Colombia to Panama, and crossing the border from Ecuador into Colombia. The roads up in the mountains there were just amazing, so much fun.
I've never been to South America. I need to get there, I guess. To me, it's all, you know, what I see, you know, and what I read about, but I've never been there.
There's a lot of issues going on at the moment, I think, and same with Central America. But then, you know, what I remember... What I remember is that there was always issues in all these countries that you hear about in the news. But when you actually get there, you know, the people were good as gold. But I don't know. You know, you don't want to go there against like popular advice and then get yourself in a world of poo, do you? You know, that would just, especially if you're bringing 70 people with you. you'd need to watch that. But South America, even Central America, like I had such a good time in Mexico, but everyone's scared about going to Mexico, but I had no issues at all and loved it. Loved the Mexican people. Great time.
When I lived, because as I said earlier, I lived in Vegas for 10 years. And one of my things, we never got to do it. We always wanted to go down to the bar, even just to watch. We were thinking about doing it one year, and that must have been... I think that must have been 2008 when that whole crash happened, because we were quite a ways along about putting a team together for it.
Yeah.
And that got banjaxed because of that. But that was, yeah, to do the Baja was always the big thing, or at least to go and see it. Now, I couldn't do it at my age nowadays. Not the age, but I just couldn't do it, I don't think. But I'd love to go down and see it and just have that whole experience of the whole thing.
Yeah. So, yeah. We went to... Cabo, right at the very bottom of the Baja Peninsula. My wife and I went there on our honeymoon, so it was awesome. Loved it. Different experience than going there with a group of blokes on bikes, I admit, but good time.
I didn't ride there. I flew in and flew out. That was when we lived in America. But that had to be the most humid place on earth I've ever been. We went humid. Whatever time it was, it must have been part of summer, but it was so humid. It was absolutely punishing. I couldn't imagine riding down there at that time of year anyway. South America sounds good. I like the sound of that.
I would look at that for sure. Something different, isn't it? Real taste of exotica.
Keep feeding me the ideas, Bruce. I'm loving it.
I will do.
Japanimbo has been like a big one that a lot of people have been saying about, you know, but again, I've not been there, so I have no kind of concept.
The mountain roads, I can't remember what they call them, but their mountain roads are just out of this world. They're quite tight and nadgery in places, but really good fun on a bike.
Good generally?
I mean, it's 10 years since I was there. But the road surface was way better than the UK. I mean, just about every country on earth is better than the UK for road surface at the moment. But
You're right about that. I've not lived in the UK for over 20 years now, but my mum lives there, so we go back for family and stuff regularly. But I've been noticing that just how shocking the roads are in the UK, like really bad.
I'm in Kent, down in the southeast, and the roads around here are, God, some of the back roads that are good to ride on, they're just, especially this time of year, they're like farm tracks in places, you know, with the potholes. They're terrible, really bad. And then you go places like Romania, and they're billiard smooth. They're absolutely gorgeous.
No, exactly.
Romania, that's another place. Have you been there?
Well, that's where we're going this year. So,
of course.
Yeah, we're starting off Czech Republic, going through Czech Republic, Slovakia, Romania, and working our way around to Istanbul. So the routes are secret, but it's not into Istanbul and back again. We're kind of going as deep into Turkey as we can. But you're absolutely right. Romania was an absolute revelation to me. We'd been there before. We'd done the Transalpina before on Cannonball. This year we're doing most of what's great around there. Not saying too much, but certainly the Transfer Garrison, which was awesome. We've already wrecked that last year because it closes obviously for the winter. So we're doing that this year. That's something we're putting out there. But I was totally shocked with Romania. Absolutely loved it. The roads were awesome. Everything's like so good value there. The food, the vegetables were noticeably different from anything else in Europe. We stopped at a hotel, not one we're using on the event, but pints of Tuborg in the, I don't know why Tuborg is their speciality there, but it seems quite popular. But they're coming out in frozen pop pints out of the freezer, €1.50 a pint. It was like happy days. 3 days we spent there.
One lad's never even come home. Exactly. Yeah, I love Romania. It's real good quality value for money and great riding as well. Yeah, especially exactly. In Transylvania and heading east or out that way. Wow.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah. That's where we're going to be dipping into. But that was on the Transfargarrison Pass. That was a hotel on there, and the property is really good value there as well. So that's another future base camp location that we've already got in mind. So we'd like the base camps to stretch from Portugal to Romania. That's the bigger vision that we've got. But,
mate, that's exciting. Yeah. That has real potential. Like a network of base camps on all the best riding locations. Wow. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Can we do a pee break? That beer's gone through me. Is that all right?
Yeah,
we go and
absolutely.
Do a quick pee break. All right, be back in two.
Okay, so leave this on, yeah?
Yeah, just leave it on.
No, I'll do the same.
So. All right, lovely job. Cheers.
Sorry, it was down a flight of stairs for me, or two actually. So
it's terrible. Got to that age now. It's not even a can of beer. I have to go.
I was going to say, it's definitely an age thing, isn't it? It's up in the night, every night. I don't know.
Just think of the experience, all the experience we've gained getting to that stage. Right, okay. Next question, David McCracken. Evening all, what's the most expensive bike to be crashed during a cannonball run, and which has been the most unusual bike you've come across on the event?
Oh, I can't think of a bike that crashed that was particularly expensive. I have to say, which is probably a good thing. But the most unusual bike, easy. That one's an easy one. So this was, I forget the year, but we were setting off just outside Vienna was the start point. Mm-hmm. And Petri, who's a Finnish rider, shows up on a stretched drag bike, Katana.
Oh, my God.
I walked up to him. I said, you must be an optimist. Because we're doing like high mountain riding, twisty stuff, and he's got this bike.
Yeah.
This guy is the only guy that ever become a cannonball legend on his first event. He's just an extraordinary character. He's a journalist, actually. He's a Finnish journalist. But yeah, he got round. I mean, by the end, he had less teeth on that Katana than my granny, I tell you. It was like, he was literally like, he asked us to get a sprocket. We tried, we couldn't.
Yeah.
But he got round. So the stretch Katana was easily the most unusual bike, I would say. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was that like the original Katana? Why would you do that?
Because it's the Petri. The Petri does these things. Like, Petri also had his, I mean, this, yeah, it can only happen to him. So, all around the world we've been with Cannonball. We did one in the UK, right? So, bearing in mind, we've never had a bike stolen. If it's possible, we'll get secure parking, underground parking for the bikes. We've never had a bike stolen or any type of problem on Cannonball. The year we did the UK event, we were started in Liverpool, and he had another old junker bike. It was a character bike he had built. His bikes, they look like they're about to fall apart, but they're actually pretty well put together. It got stolen on the first night, the night before the start. And we were going from Liverpool to the Isle of Man. Petri's like, no, I'm not giving up. And he bought this old Kawasaki, I can't remember the money, but he bought a bike on the Isle of Man for 600 quid, I think it was. And he got that round as well. So he's the type of guy that kind of thing kind of somehow happens to, kind of thing. But yeah, the stretch Katana, definitely the most unusual bike we've had, I think. So.
You must get some real characters on this event. Especially, like, as you say, a lot of repeat customers, because people get more and more comfortable, don't they? And like really come out of their shell, I bet.
That's what I'm saying. But I don't have the way of words to put it across how amazing these people are. It's like this get together of characters who've got no right to even like each other. I mean, they're so wildly different from all different places, you know, literally from dustmen. You know, special mic to multimillionaires. No one gives a damn. Do you know what I mean? It's just all about having a good time and just this mix of like cultures and countries that come together. It is genuinely awesome. I mean, really, I'm not saying that. That's the reason I've been doing it for 20 years, because it's the people that you meet every year again. It's just really fantastic. So, but yeah.
Is there a prerequisite to come on one on the event? Like, how do people apply? Because I see there's like a... There's like a pack that you have to download, and then you almost apply to come on the event.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we normally speak with people like before they actually book. I mean, once they've shown an interest, we get to sort of chat with them first just to sound out, you know, what their mindset is and everything. But gotcha. Yeah, I mean, it's not too complicated, really. But, you know, like I say, we don't think it's right for absolute novice riders. So you've got to have so many years experience. I think it's 3 or 4 years experience that we ask for at least before you come.
Makes sense. Yeah.
You've got to wear all the kit. You know, we can't have another special Mike coming up with his sweatshirt and his suntan. Don't want that. So we want you know, wearing all the kit. But yeah, I mean, like I say, it's for you to decide whether, you know, you're up for coming. You can't be the judge and jury of everybody in terms of their riding ability. Mm-hmm. What we do, you know, is we have, for new riders, we offer a buddy system. So any new rider that comes in, we normally pair them up with one of the vets so that they can just, you know, have their hand held for the first day or so. Most people find the other guys that are riding at their pace and slot into that, you know, so you get quite often the same group of riders that go around together for the whole week.
Gotcha.
So we do that. There's other things we do. You know, we do live tracking. So we recommend that people use the live tracking feature on the WhatsApp group so we can see where everyone is at any given time. So if someone's come off or had a problem, we know where they are, even if they can't call in. So there's a bunch of stuff like that we do as well. The safety stuff is in their mind, but we don't, you know, it's kind of can be boring, but it's also essential kind of thing, you know.
Of course, it's a business after all, isn't it? You've got a duty of care and it's your PR at the end of the day. You don't want someone dying or killing somebody on a trip.
I think, you know, the fact that everyone's on the same route and we've got the support vehicle going through helps that. You know, we have... call them kind of robocops, but we have like some of our senior riders also that are kind of tasked with like just keeping an eye out. So if something's happening that they're not comfortable with, or they think it's getting, you know, it's very easy to get a bit wrapped up in it. Do you know what I mean? When you're having a great time. So they're there to also just have a quiet word and just put in the reins where it's needed as well. So, but yeah, I mean, the system we've got now works good. It works good. Considering what we're doing and the mileage that we're covering, we're quite happy with that side of things.
Right, last one in the clan, Owen Harries. Evening all. Hope the day has treated you all well. Question for Steve. What was the most bizarre or odd encounter whilst on a cannonball run that did not involve being on a bike? And again, this can have an 18 cert this episode, so say what you like, within reason.
Well, it's got to be Nuts and the Naked, I think. So
I love the names.
So Mr. Nutsen is a Norwegian rider who had been on 3 or 4 cannibals prior. Nice guy, quite quiet actually. Not one of those guys that's that standout loud character.
It's always them.
Yeah, and we had finished the cannibal with this particular year, a couple of years back. We were finishing in Bilbao. And the final night meal was actually in the executive booth of the football stadium there. So the football stadium was empty. There was no match going on, but they've got like a really high-end restaurant there that we'd hired for our group. And, of course, you know, you've got it's a perfect view of the whole stadium. All the floodlights are on. Pitch is looking fantastic. It was me. Somebody may have mentioned to him, wouldn't it be funny if someone streaked the pitch? A castaway comment. 10 minutes later.
Yeah, all right. Lit the touch paper.
10 minutes later, we see Knutsen has worked his way out of the restaurant and is going around the top tier. So we're on the very top level, if you imagine. So you've got, I don't know what it is in feet, but it's got to be a good 100 feet to get from the top tier down to the pitch. Ordinarily, you can't do it because all the doors are locked, but they just so happened to be doing some works there. And they had this huge electrical cable that was running from the very top to down to the pitch. So Knutsen has stripped off, has got onto this electrical cable. I can't imagine the chafing that that guy had from sliding down this electrical cable because it's this thick. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, he's got down. He's now streaking across the pitch. He's got to the centre circle and he sort of turned round and revealed the goods. Luckily, it was so far away that, you know, he couldn't be too shocked. And of course, and then the locals, the security have come out. So they're now chasing him around the pitch. It's like a Benny Hill scene of him being chased around the Bilbao football pitch. So there you go. No bikes involved. A very cannibal story.
I think we knew that it was going to go that way, didn't we? Last one from Owen. Question for Bruce. Would you consider entering the Beast? So the Beast is the jigsaw I took on the world trip. Okay. Yeah, 100%. That would be awesome to take the Beast on something like that. Yeah, absolutely. So how do people enter? How do people come on one of these?
Yeah, just come to the website. So you can type in cannibalbikerun.com or cannibalwisdom.com or just search Cannibal Bike Run. You'll see us. There's all the information on the site. You can download the information pack that tells you about each individual year's event. And you can just apply. There's an application form. Like I say, we don't take everybody. You know, we're not snotty about it, but you know, you've got to be right for the event. But if you want to join and you're willing to come, go on a bit of a venture, have a good time, then you're very welcome. And it's as easy as that, really.
What sort of price are we looking at? Because it's not cheap, but it's not as expensive as you think it's going to be.
No, exactly. Yeah. So this year's event is €2,499. That's euros, mm-hmm. not pounds. That includes this year we've given a bonus stage and a bonus night. So there's 8 nights hotel. There's a breakfast every day for everybody. The hotels are all quality hotels. So like I said, we've got 3 5-star hotels for this year. So you get your breakfast, you get your dinner every night. We, with the support vehicles, we lay on kind of random lunches here and there as well, type of things to regroup everybody out on the stage. There's a lot of extra stuff. We kind of, our thing is like under promise, over deliver. So there's a lot of drinks that get put in and open bar parties. We had an open bar last year that just about bankrupted me. But anyway, we'll probably try that again, but with a limited time period, I think. So there's a lot of stuff like that. We do activities on the event as well, which again, is nothing's announced. You just, you know, on the route, you'll be asked to stop somewhere and there'll be something going on. Last year, we had a downhill mountain buggy, I was going to say race. It actually turned into a race, but it wasn't supposed to be a race. But yeah, so there's a lot of activities that we do. You know, we normally, you know, hire out boats at some point as well to do different stuff as well. So you don't know what you get until you get there.
Yeah.
But I guess my thing is that if it wasn't good value, you wouldn't get 80% of the people coming back again. So
100%.
You can't compare it to an everyday tour. Yeah. It's a different kettle of fish altogether. So
an open mind and a spirit of adventure.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah. There you go. Sign me up. Right, okay, that's all the ones on the clan, and I think there's one, maybe two over on Instagram. So pop across there. First one on Instagram, AlexCHWS. Will you be riding in the US anytime soon?
Yeah, really good question, actually. Really good question. We did have a go in the very, very early years of running a US cannonball when I very first moved out there, actually. We didn't get it off the ground then, I have to say. But, I mean, we were in our early days and we didn't know as much as we know now. There is an intention to go over to the US. Absolutely. We've got a lot of US riders that have got a lot of experience over there as well. So yeah. At some point, we're certainly going to do that. I think probably what we will do is do it as one of our mini events. So as I said to you earlier, we're going to introduce like a mini ball, if you like, which will be run in different areas to give people a taste of it over a shorter time period and a lower price point. So yeah. The US is certainly on the radar for that. So watch your space.
I just went over in March. I just took myself over. I've got a friend that lives over in Indiana and he had a bike. So he said, you know, if you get your flights over here, take my bike and hit the road. So that's exactly what I did. I had 10 days over there and I explored all. I did a big massive loop from Indiana all the way as far out as sort of West Virginia, Virginia, North Carolina, then back through all around Appalachia and then back through Tennessee, then back up into like Kentucky and then Indiana. So it's about 2,500 mile loop that I did.
Okay.
But I was blown away by how good the back roads were. I stayed off the interstate and highways. It was just all back roads.
Yeah.
The roads were insane. Like A-class European biking roads, you know, amazing. Yeah. I was blown away. I never thought you'd get that in the States. Okay, and it was just mile after mile of it.
We have to compare notes on that then, because as I say, I live West Coast when I was out there, so all the riding I was doing was out there. There's some good stuff out there, but it's not enough to do a week's worth of Cannonball without trudging across the flat dust bowl, as they call it out there, you know. So that could definitely, and I love the American South as well. I like the people there. Much different from other areas of America I've been to. So yeah, that sounds good. Let's do it.
It's a different mentality,
give me the
room, isn't it?
Let's do it.
I'll pass it through. Yeah. It's a different mentality in the South. I've mates that live in the States, but they're all like New York, LA, these sorts of places. Yeah. And obviously that is a different mentality compared to the South. The South is, you know, fuck yeah, America and freedom. You know, they're hot on freedom down there, aren't they? Like no one tells you what to do. You do your own thing. Everyone's incredibly polite and respectful, but they expect you to be like that to them as well, don't they? So it's, I just like it. It's just nice, nice place to be. Love to live there.
I don't know what the ideal time weather-wise is to be there. That's something I need to look into, I guess. But yeah, I mean, certainly that's going to happen at some point in the future, for sure. So
awesome. Exciting. Mate, that's us. Is there one on Facebook? Let me have a little look. Where was the Facebook one? No, he's just saying it's an... Alan Jones, he says, awesome event. So I'm not sure if Alan's been on one of the Cannonballs or not, but he's a fan.
He's not been on one. He's been on 12.
He's been on 12. Good lad, Alan.
Yeah, Alan has got a beard that rivals yours, actually. Very, very good dude. Very good dude. He's a tattoo artist that lives in Holland. He's a Brit. Ex-army, very, very good guy. Very good guy. So
you must meet some characters. Because on my tours, you get people coming along and you get people who, to look at, you would not expect the backstory that they come with or the character that they have, you know. I love that part of meeting people and just not knowing what you're going to get.
Yeah. It's also the way it just unveils itself in layers. Do you know what I mean? Because it might be like year three of someone riding, like Knutson, year four, you know, from absolutely obscurity to naked in Bilbao. Do you know? But I mean, that's an extreme example, but it's like literally you'll be chatting with people like, you know, this and that, and then all of a sudden you know, they'll drop in something that they've done. And they're just, you know, that's the other thing. It's like, you know, you go on a car event, right? Within 10 minutes of meeting your car guy, you know what he drives, how much he earns, how big his house is. Who gives a shit, you know? Whereas with Cannibal, he's just literally, there's none of that kind of like bigging it up between people. Yeah. It's just different, you know, and that's what I love about it. But yeah, the characters is definitely the right word, and the way that they just unveil themselves year after year is awesome.
Good. Four beers in, you find out that there used to be an alligator wrestler or something. Yes. You're just like, how did this not come up sooner?
Exactly, yeah.
Mate, Steve, that's all the questions, mate. I've kept you for almost 2 hours.
Oh, wow. Listen,
thank you very much for spending the evening with us, mate. Much appreciated. Yeah. Before we call it quits, the floor is yours. If there's anything you want to plug, if there's anything you want to say, feel free.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't hard sell our event. Yeah, we've never run an ad for it, you know. So it's certainly not for everybody. But if you feel it's for you, get in touch. I'll speak with you personally. I'll put you in touch with other riders that have been there and done it before in your own country. If you're foreign or from abroad, you can speak with someone in your own language. So we're very happy to put you in touch, get an independent point of view as to whether you feel it's right for you. And if you do, you're welcome. And you're all friends here, you know, so you're very, very welcome to try. And if you found out that it wasn't for you, I can guarantee you would have had an adventure in the meantime. So
yeah. I'll leave all the links down below, folks. So if you're listening to the podcast, check out the show notes. If you're watching the vid, have a look at the vid description, the website, socials, everything will be down there. I mean, my whole mantra with Teapot One is live your life, and combine that with motorbikes. If you fancy the idea of an organised tour, so to speak, that fulfils that live your life mantra, I'd suggest maybe this is going to be up your alley. So check it out.
Life without limits was our early thing. So we're like on the same page. Same thing.
Mate. Love it. Yeah. Steve, thank you very much for joining me, mate. I'm much appreciated. It's been a pleasure chatting with you and finding out more about it. I've got a feeling I might be applying for one of these.
We've had a lot of Scottish riders over the years, but they're aging rapidly. Do you know what I mean? So they're slimming down. So we need the Scottish element back up there. So
right, you're on. I'll bring a kilt.
We've had that as well. That's another Petri story. I won't go there.
Oh my god. Folks, hope you've enjoyed this one. Check out all those links down below. Keep doing your thing. Look after those that you love. Get on out there whenever you can. But most importantly, live your life without limits. Woo-ha!
Good stuff.
Dude, let me stop that.